This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome back to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on time limitation to bring a claim. Why is it so important? I am joined by Senior Barrister Tim Sampson from Lamb Chambers in London. Tim is the head of the construction team at his chambers, and he regularly acts in complex disputes with significant technical or expert evidential issues, including adjudications and in high court enforcement proceedings, as well as leading in the Court of Appeal. He also has substantial experience in relation to mediation and alternative dispute resolution. Tim, once again, thank you so much for joining me today.
Always a pleasure, Hattie, as you know.
It's a pleasure to see you. We're still over Zoom, but that's quite all right. It's very efficient to do things this way, so I'm not going to complain for now. So, in order to bring a claim against a defendant, you have to do so within a specific period of time. And in some of the main reasons for the existence of time limitation periods are so that the defendant does not have the threat of being sued hanging over them forever. Evidence can become less and less reliable and more difficult to secure as time passes. And also, claimants should have an incentive to bring a claim as close to the event as possible. But why is it so important? So, Tim, can you please expand on a little more with what is meant by time limitation to make a claim? And tell us, why is it so important?
Well, Hattie, you've described some of the sort of practical issues that can arise with leaving a claim too long. But fundamentally, it's important because the law says you're not allowed to bring a claim if you leave it too long. And under the Limitation Act, there are a series of statutory bars to claims based on time. Now, fall foul of those time limits, and it doesn't matter how good your claim is. It's not a judgment on the claim itself. It is simply saying you had a certain period of time to exercise your rights. You've chosen not to. The law won't assist you. And these cover almost all the most important areas of contract, tort, personal injury, employment, deals to do with land. They have different limitation periods. Some can be very short. Some can be up to 12 years.
Yes, and we'll mention that a little bit further on, I think, because I think that's important to know some of those.
But in addition to the absolute bars, for example, in a contract claim, it's 6 years from the date of the breach of that contract. But don't forget that time can start to run against you, as lawyers would say, even before that in terms of remedies. For example, you have a contract claim. One of your equitable remedies is specific performance. You can say to the other side, well, I've paid my money and you haven't performed the contract. I want you to perform it now. Leave it too long, and the court will simply say, well, that remedy is off the table already. And it doesn't even matter that the limitation period hasn't expired yet. The court does not assist people who sit on their rights.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think it's important to also mention that time limitations only apply in civil proceedings and not to criminal proceedings. Is that right, Tim?
Yes. Essentially, criminal proceedings are always at large, i.e., if the courts and the police and the CPS finally catch up with you for something, there's no time bar on them prosecuting you. Obviously, there are going to be difficulties many, many years down the road with witnesses or documentary evidence, but it doesn't mean they can't bring a claim. So yes, what we're talking about here are really civil claims.
Yes, I thought it'd be interesting to point that out. I mean, I've certainly read over the news over years, you know, how a murder was resolved 40 years later and the person that committed the crime was convicted. And you think, how on earth did that last so long? But we're talking about civil proceedings and time limitation to bring a claim within civil proceedings. Now, I know you mentioned a couple of areas there, but what types of claims does time limitation exist in?
Well, any area that you're dealing with in terms of the claimant, you're almost certainly going to face a limitation period. So the standard contract and tort claims, so things that have gone wrong, those are 6-year periods. But for example, you can have very short periods for bringing a claim. Defamation, slander, it's a year.
A year?
And that also applies...
That's short.
Very, very short. And the courts are not, although they do have some limited powers to extend, and we'll discuss that, you're not likely to get much sympathy from the court if you sit on your hands and don't bring a claim within the limitation period.
Yes.
Sorry,
Tim.
It's simply, if you're saying that someone has published something that defames you, the obvious answer is to bring a claim immediately to stop that publication. Sure. To leave it hanging around for a couple of years and then go, I don't like this. Well, the court say, well, if you don't like it, why didn't you do something about it when you had the opportunity to do it?
Yes.
Right at the beginning, before the defamatory statement gets stuck in the public mind.
Or on the internet somewhere, as nothing seems to disappear off the internet. That's what I'm learning as I'm getting older.
But most people aren't, fortunately, involved in those sort of claims. But where you do have extraordinarily short time limits are things like employment claims for unfair dismissal. 3 months minus a day from the date you were pushed out the door. So
to start your claim or to start any action, right? I mean, I was going to say the most common types of claims in employment cases, general civil litigation, money claims. Does it cover probate?
It does. It does cover probate. Probate, fortunately, has a very long period. It's 12 years.
That's a long time. Because claims, I think recovery of land has got 12 years as well, hasn't it?
There are some to do with property rights that have a significantly extended period because the thing you are arguing about still exists, whereas a contract 12 years ago, it's almost certainly a nothing anymore.
Dispute has taken place and that's your fallen out sort of thing. So contract 6 years, arbitration 6 years, right?
Arbitration is...
Awards in arbitration, I guess.
You're talking about enforcement of arbitration awards is a different thing. Arbitration itself is a statutory creature under the Arbitration Act.
Why wouldn't it sound so grandeur?
And normally... an arbitration clause is written into a contract. The parties agree that they will resolve their disputes by way of arbitration. And of course, they can then deal with how and when the arbitration proceedings will be allowed under the contract. But once you've got your award and the other side then decides they don't want to comply with it, it will then be enforced as a regular judgment. And then you have the rules about enforcement of judgments.
Which is a whole new podcast in itself, I think. But
it is. One other area I think we should just touch on, because we've spoken about it at length previously in earlier podcasts, are the Consumer Rights Act limitations. Now, these aren't true limitation periods, but you'll remember that if you want to return goods or demand that they are repaired after delivery and they're not what they should be, you've got some very, very short time limits, up from just 30 or 60 days.
That's really interesting, and I'm glad you're mentioning this, to be honest, Tim, because we have done podcasts on consumer rights, refunds and exchanges and all sorts of things. And you're not talking years, of course. It's interesting. It's interesting that you're covering this on this podcast.
Well, you do still have your statutory right to bring a breach of contract claim, but why not, if the goods are defective, have your instant remedy under the consumer rights legislation. But that really does require you to move swiftly if you want to rely on those short-term rights. So I wouldn't dismiss them because they are, when they apply, they are powerful and are a much cheaper, more effective way of getting what you want as a consumer than going through the rigmarole, even of a small claim in the county courts, which can take 18 months. It'll cost you time and effort.
Yes.
Where the rights under the Consumer Rights Act legislation are designed to be very quick, very simple, and always applicable.
Yes, yes.
Obviously, it's for consumers. It doesn't apply elsewhere.
What about for money claims? What does money claims... I mean, because it's general civil litigation, isn't it? So would it be 6 years to make a money claim? Yes.
money claims are 6 years.
Yeah, yeah. From the date, and all these time periods that we're talking about are from the date of the incident. It's not at all when you realised, or from which one? I mean, it'll be different, I guess, for different areas.
It's the date the cause of action arises. So for contract, it's the date of the breach, not the date you sign the contract. If it's a tortious act, say negligence, it's the date when you became aware or should have become aware of the negligence.
Yes. And I guess that's probably a very, you know, quite an argued point in court about when you should have perhaps become aware of the negligence and when you did, if there's a big time difference between that.
And my recommendation would always be to err on the side of caution. You do not want to end up on the wrong side of the limitation point, because quite rightly, the defendant, if they spot you outside of the limitation period, will automatically run it as a statutory bar.
Well, this is what I was just going to say. It's up to, well, let's talk about the next bit, because that bit's got to come after, I think, for it all, in order for it to all make sense. But what would happen if you're out of time? Are there any circumstances whereby the court may overlook being out of time?
Well, there are. The Limitation Act itself realises that these can be very, very strict rules, and strict rules tend to provide injustice. So the first on the list of things that the court would take into consideration were it to be said, well, we want to bring a claim, but we are now out of time. Was the claimant under a disability? A disability is simply meaning they were not in a position to bring a claim. For example, if you were under 18 when the cause of action arose, well, you're not allowed to bring a claim if you're at least 18.
So say the incident happened when you were 12, your time limitation will start from the date you turn 18?
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
Although be very careful with personal injury claims, because people can act on behalf of minors to bring claims. But in a civil case, for say a contract issue, where the minor has a right under a contract, they wouldn't actually be, of course, the party to the contract, because they couldn't legally be a party to a contract under the age of 18. But there are, as I say, if you can show that you could not bring the claim for some good reason, then the court can extend the period. One of the areas that we've touched on, but maybe without thinking about it, is this question of money claims and debts.
Yes.
Now, if the party who owes the money admits that they owe the money, they haven't paid it, but they say the debt arose 5.5 years ago, if they admit at that point, yes, I'm sorry, I haven't paid it, I do owe you the money, the limitation clock starts again from the date of the admission, or in fact, a part payment of the debt.
Oh, that's interesting. So not from when they didn't promise to pay, so to speak, but from when they actually admitted, yes, I owe it, haven't paid it, which could be years apart.
Well, yes, it's a mistake that some defendants fall into. They think the limitation period's coming up and they essentially accept the debt, but think they're going to get away with it because...
I just want to expand on that to make that point clear, because that's actually a very interesting point. What you're saying, Tim, is that some defendants turn up to court on the basis that maybe they owe money, or they accept that they owe money, but they openly accept it in the hearing, thinking, well, it's been over 6 years since I owed the money. So, you know, at the end of the day, there's going to be a time limitation point. We're going to argue that. And what actually happens is, because they admit to it during the proceedings, their six years starts from then.
No. The admission has to be before the six-year period has expired.
But I'm saying it then gives them a fresh term in order to... For the claim to claim the money. Because I think one of the most interesting things about time limitation is, if you're out of time, it's up to the defence to raise that. And you mentioned the term time barred.
Mm.
So it's up to the defence to raise an issue with the court on the basis that it is out of time, not for the claim to say, well, we're in time or out of time.
Well, it is for the defendant to raise it as a defence. It's a complete defence, in fact, if it holds. If there was the claimant, you are aware that the defendant will raise an issue of limitation, you should certainly deal with it in advance because it will come. You have no...
A good lawyer will raise it, is what we're saying, Tim, right?
And if it's missed by all the lawyers, it's unlikely to be missed by the judge, who may ask why it's not being dealt with. And it is, of course, possible for the parties to accept, yes, the claim is more than 6 years for a contract claim, but we agree to extend the time. The parties, for whatever reason,
The defendant would be, quite, what's the word I'm looking for here?
Well, not wholly generous.
I can't even find the word, but as a defendant, why would you agree to extend the time limitation if, by accepting that it's out of time, you have a defence and the claim no longer can stick to you, if you like?
Well, of course, the problem may bite on both parties. There may be a counterclaim that's out of time.
Ah.
And both parties want to bring their claim and counterclaim.
Now, that's interesting.
So they waive...
Now I get it.
Pretty right. So if you want to bring your claim, you have to permit my counterclaim and vice versa.
Very interesting. Oh, then it does get interesting. That's exactly why I probably agreed for an extension of time as a defendant, if you've got the counterclaim that you want to stick to the other side.
Parties could also agree, for example, if you're coming up to the end of the limitation period, for the claim to be issued, so technically it's got its rubber stamp from the court and the court fees paid within the limitation period, but then the court stays those proceedings, for example, for mediation.
And just explain, let's just explain to our listeners what stays to stay the proceedings means. It means when the court says, right, we're just going to give this 3 months or 6 months. You both go away, see if it can be resolved, or you execute what you told me today you're going to execute, because there has to be a reason for it. The court just won't do that. So the time limitation, what does it do then? Does it freeze during that time, Tim?
Essentially, it puts the case in a deep freeze.
Yes.
Because the way civil procedure works now, everything works on a ratchet of requirements. Claim goes in as a claim form, then the particulars, then the defence and a counterclaim, then a reply. And the dates within the rules are all specified. So you've actually got a very rapid turnover of documents.
Yes.
If the court hasn't stayed the proceedings, you are stuck with complying with those requirements. And it may be that that's running up a lot of costs. And if you've decided to go off to mediation, the last thing you want is to have to continually run the court process alongside the mediation process for no purpose at all.
Yes.
But the court says it's all stayed. Not only no one should do anything, no one can do anything in these proceedings because it's stayed.
Mm-hmm.
So the court isn't interested in more particulars or defence because it'll say, well, it's stayed.
Or perhaps one party has said before the court hearing, OK, we'll resolve this, we'll pay this, or we'll resolve this issue as a defendant. The claimant's agreed and you want to go away to see whether they are going to resolve it. So you say, tell the court, look, we think we've got a resolution. Can we both agree that the claim should just be put in on hold, stayed, the technical term, just until we see whether this is all going to work out. I've had claims that before, and I have to say it's very useful because if you say to the court, oh, this is resolved, yes, we've both promised that we're going to resolve it, you go away and it falls out of bed and the resolution doesn't take place, or the mediation falls out of bed where you've got experts involved or adjudication, you know, to try and resolve these things, it doesn't happen. And you've told the court that it's all resolved, you have to start that claim all over again. Whereas if it's on pause, you go back and say, well, actually, this is what we tried to do. It didn't work. I mean, you know, whether your discussions were without prejudice or not is another thing. But actually, we need to continue with the court process. And then that time period in between that. But once it's in court, it's in court. You can't argue time limitation once the court's accepted the claim.
No, once it's up and running, within the court process and it's being issued. The issue is the critical thing within the court. That's when the court clock starts running.
Yes.
Before that, the case doesn't exist. It hasn't got a number. It doesn't exist in the court files. The other area, as we were talking about, when the court can step in and extend time. Personal injury, the court has an equitable jurisdiction to extend the 3-year period. But it has to take into consideration both the rights of the claimant and the rights of the defendant.
Right.
So the longer you have left your personal injury claim, the more difficult it gets for the parties to resolve. So if it's unfair 5 years down the road to permit a claim, even if there probably was a good claim, the court may well say no, because the defendant can't properly defend themselves now. You got your medical report actually 4 years ago, but now you're completely better. The problem is, how can the defendant really assess the extent of the injury when it's so far beyond the date when the injury occurred? All they've got is claimant's evidence. Well, claimant's evidence, despite the fact it's supposed to be expert, may well be weighted in favour of the claimant.
Yes.
So it's unfair on the defendant to extend time, but it's not always unfair. And that brings me on to the final area of extensions, which is fraud, concealment and mistake.
But isn't fraud criminal? So wouldn't it fall out of the time limitation?
Fraud, people get very confused about fraud. There are two types of fraud. There is civil fraud.
Yes, indeed. Yes, thank you for that, Tim. I just think fraud, criminal, prison, criminal... sorry, go ahead.
2006, it is a criminal offence. There are a number of offences of fraud under that Act. There is also a civil fraud jurisdiction, which is the tort of deceit. But where you can show that there has been, for example, concealment of the claim, or there's been a fraud that you weren't able to detect, but you become aware of later, because it's been cleverly disguised, and fraud runs into concealment.
Yes, I was just going to say, something's been hidden, concealed from you, and as a result, you couldn't see that you could bring a claim, or there was a wrongdoing that you could bring your claim against.
Yes, as long as you don't, it's not something that with reasonable diligence you could have think, actually, this is just wrong.
I can just see the court hearings going on and on and arguing about reasonable diligence.
But the problem you've got, if your claim is based on, or the limitation has been missed, but the claim raises issues of fraud, concealment or mistake, and the court takes the view that something doesn't, I mean, use a non-technical expression, smell right, they can say, we don't care the limitation period has in fact expired. We're going to hear the case. Because otherwise, the Limitation Act becomes a shield for serious wrongdoers.
Well, that's very key, isn't it? Just to point out that a court can overturn a limitation period if it seems and deems fit to do so, as you said earlier, for both claimant and defendant. So that is very interesting. But I just think, again, anybody seriously out of time on a claim should err with caution, because it doesn't mean, and again, I go back to what you said earlier, this is not based on how great your case may be. It's based on a various amount of factors, and it's, you know, relates very differently across the board. But overall, time limitation is absolutely key, because it would mean, it could very likely mean, that you can't bring your claim. And I would say, if you have a claim and you think you're out of time, for goodness sakes, take some legal advice. Do you do direct access, Tim? You do, don't you?
I do.
Yes, yes. Let me just mention that. So Tim does direct access. He's a direct access barrister, as well as obviously being instructed through law firms, which means, as I've said on various other podcasts, you can instruct him directly through his clerk at Lamb Chambers in London. So the process would be, you would call the clerk, you'll call the chambers, you say, I have this issue, I'd like to seek some advice from Tim Sampson. They will then speak to you about the process involved and if you wish to proceed. That means you're going directly to the barrister rather than dealing with the law firm in between, which could save you lots of money. It will certainly get you lots of big brains very quickly. That's the first thing I'll always point out there. So we are bearing out of time, but...
There was one further point I was just going to make.
You make that further point, because the last bit is the last bit, and I want to hear the further point myself.
All we've discussed, we have to remember, is the rules within England and Wales. This is the law of this country.
Yes.
If your claim happens to arise in a foreign jurisdiction, say France or Switzerland or Germany, the limitations will be the limitations applied by those countries.
Yes, indeed.
So don't ever assume that two countries have even remotely similar limitation rules. We have a common law statute system here. French have a civil code system. They are very different. So if, for example, you an issue arises when you're on holiday or you've bought goods from a foreign company, do not assume that you can rely on limitation periods that apply in this country.
You've got to go
back to the rules of the country where the legal right arose.
That's a very important point, Tim, and I think one well raised, because you would assume that people sitting here and thinking, well, you know, as you say, you purchased, you know, you went directly and booked a holiday home in France or in America or in wherever, and now you've got issues with that. Someone took a big deposit, it's not giving it back, or the holiday home didn't exist, or whatever it is. I get it. And I think it's very important for people to consider the laws of the land in which they are looking to bring any claim to the table to. So where could someone in the UK, since we've said that, in England and Wales, go to try and find out the time limitations on their dispute? Where would you say is a good place to go and take a look?
I'm afraid the answer to this one is go and speak to a lawyer.
I didn't think you were going to say that.
I don't always do...
Well, let me just come on. Call Lamb Chambers and speak to Tim.
Well, there are other barristers out there. But the point is, the issues to do with limitation are the statutory bars under the Limitation Act. There's also identifying when the cause of action actually arose. And then the remedies that you might wish to pursue that may also be barred. So these are not questions that I'm afraid are overly susceptible to being
on the public domain.
Probably on a website.
Yeah, no, I get. I have to say, when we were doing some research on this topic, I just thought, well, it's so entrenched in itself. There isn't an obvious place that I could say, go to this website to find, get some information, because it's going to be very, very specific to your case and your potential claim. And I think that's got to be right. Go to a lawyer, get some advice, because, you know, the last thing you want to do is run off with a claim, either yourself or instructing a lawyer to do it, if the time limitation point hasn't been first and foremost carefully thought out and worked out.
Yes, I mean, the only area where you may wish to just review it yourself very quickly is in relation to employment cases for unfair dismissal, constructive unfair dismissal, and discrimination, the 3 month minus a day limitation period.
Yes, yes. And that's a very short limitation period.
It's the shortest of the lot. If you want to bring a claim in the tribunal for those issues under the Employment Act.
Yes.
The ACAS website is very good about that.
Yes, acas.org.uk. It's very good with assisting on employment matters. And so is the gov.uk website. And both of those websites, if you literally search employment law or employment issues in their search bars, there's a raft of information that comes up. And I do find both of those websites very useful.
Those are, I would say, in terms of employment, the best places to go. And if you do have a claim for unfair dismissal, constructive unfair dismissal, discrimination, check. The chances are the limitation is going to be that 3 month limitation point. Get on with the claim. It's as simple as that. Don't assume that there is going to be some alternative mechanism for getting the rights that you want. Certainly before the employment tribunal, your moment will have passed.
Yes, no, indeed. Sound top tips, Tim. Thank you very much for another fantastic podcast.
Thank you, Hattie.
Always a pleasure. And what I'll say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcast. And you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.